Hello, America. Good evening. Welcome to Clout with Richard Green. And you will hear from Richard in just a minute. He is in Copenhagen, hanging out with the best of the best, with the president of Costa Rica, Richard Branson, and Bianca Jagger, and Bradley Whitford. Not me. No, I'm here in Washington, D.C. This is Mark Levine. You may have heard me before. I've guest hosted for Richard before, and I've often been a guest on his show. I'm the host of The Inside Scoop out of Washington, D.C. You can find out more about me on my website, radioinsidescoop.com. But before I get into tonight's topic, where I want to talk about race and talk about the things that we don't often talk about publicly, I want to introduce, just before he goes to sleep, the host of this show, Richard Green. How you doing,
hey,
Richard?
Mark. Thanks, man. Thanks so much for filling in. I'm on Skype here in Copenhagen, and it's been snowing. And really, Copenhagen hasn't started yet. It starts tomorrow. Everybody is really looking forward to Barack Obama stepping up to the plate and showing some cojones.
Do you think he will, Richard? Because I got to tell you, I think the feeling in Washington is he's going to deliver a good speech, and then not much will happen.
Well, I think, yes, I think he's going to deliver a lovely speech, but you're right. People here are very sophisticated, and they're not swayed by speeches. They want action, and I don't think so. I mean, we can't even get health care through the Senate with our friend Joe Lieberman. How are we going to get any serious climate change legislation?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't exactly call him our friend. Let's just say our not-yet enemy. But I guess my question is that the world is looking to America for leadership here, but do they realize that Barack Obama, that he's president, not dictator, and that he's constrained by things like the United States Congress?
Well, I actually had a conversation with some Europeans, and they don't understand our system, and they don't understand why Obama can't just do that, and they're trying to wrap their head around it. And it's hard to explain. I mean, how do you explain Mitch McConnell and Sarah Palin to rational people?
How do you explain the fact that you need 60 votes in an already undemocratic institution where you get two senators from Alaska and two senators from California? It is hard to explain.
Yeah, listen, it sounds like an interesting topic. Before you go into race, you're in Washington. Can you explain Joe Lieberman?
No, but I can tell you this. I hope that everyone who knows anyone in Connecticut is on the phone with their friends, family, wayward acquaintances, high school friends, and talks to them, because the only way to put pressure on him is back at home. And, part of it is the insurance companies. There is a large insurance company presence in Connecticut. Hartford is known as an insurance capital. But Chris Dodd, for example, that doesn't faze him. He's a good liberal. I actually like Chris Dodd. He gets some attack from some time to time. I think he's a good man. I just think Joe Lieberman, ever since he lost the Democratic primary to Ned Lamont, has been, let's just say, upset. And he's not the good... Well, he was never a great Democrat. He was always, let's just say, one of the more conservative Democrats in the party. But I think he's gone even further to the right ever since that primary loss.
Mark, you're a really good read on the politicians in that town. Is it arrogance or ego, or does he actually believe the crap that comes out of his mouth?
Well, it's a little bit of all of that, and the fact that you got to remember that money is the mother's milk of politics, and as I said, the insurance interests are very powerful. In fact, if you were to name a state in the United States that was controlled by insurance, Connecticut would be more than any other one of the 50 states. But I also think that we haven't given up hope yet. At least I haven't. The way the process works, a lot of Americans themselves don't understand the process. The House is voting. Now the Senate's going to vote. But that's not at all a done deal. Just because I fully expect by December 23rd a health care bill out of the Senate that will not include a public option, to its shame and discredit, that will not include buying into Medicare, to its shame and discredit, that ain't the end of the deal. The House bill includes those wonderful things. Well, not the buy into Medicare, but anyway, it includes the public option. And then come January, the House bill and the Senate bill will have to be conferenced, and they'll have to come to some kind of agreement. The Constitution requires that every bill that becomes law be identical, last to the comma and the period, in both the House and the Senate. So the real hope is that we can convince them in the negotiations. And I think if a lot of people put a lot of pressure in Connecticut, because he won't listen to anybody else, on Joe Lieberman saying, what kind of renegade Democrat are you? You used to be the vice presidential nominee. Where have you gone, Joe Lieberman? You used to be okay domestically, even if you weren't okay internationally, and really, really push him. I think there's a chance, if he hasn't completely given up on politics, we might push him in the right direction, and I certainly think it's worth a try.
One quick question, Mark, because I've never completely understood this, and I don't think anybody does. Let's say the Senate passes a really crappy bill mm-hmm. without a public option and all of that stuff, mm-hmm. and it goes into conference. Is it possible that the more liberal House version would win out and the Senate bill essentially would be irrelevant at that point?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The way conference works, it's like you take two things that are probably 80% identical, and then you mix and you match and you do horse trading, and it's done in private, and it's probably something that shouldn't be seen, like making sausage. But it's all just legislative horse trading, and it is absolutely possible that the public option will win out. In fact, I think all of us need to call Nancy Pelosi and ask that she insist on it. I know a number of liberal House members, including some I've had on my show, that have said they will refuse to vote for a final bill unless it includes a public option. So in all, I think it's kind of like a game of chicken. You have the liberals saying, we're not going to vote for it unless it includes a public option. You have people like Lieberman saying, well, I'm not going to vote for it if it includes a public option. And then you have the Democrats knowing that if they don't get a bill passed at all, they're going to lose the midterm 2010 elections. So it's a game of chicken. Who will blink? Is it Lieberman? Is it the progressives? I don't know, but I certainly hope it'll be Lieberman.
Mark, but just to clarify, let's say it comes out of conference with a public option.
Right.
It then has to go back to the House and the Senate
right.
for the final approval, and the Senate would basically then say no, and then what happens?
Well, there's no bill. There's no bill until they pass it. And by the way, it isn't the Senate saying no. I want to be clear on this. The Senate only needs 50 votes plus Joe Biden to say yes, and we have more than 50 votes. We probably have 58 solid votes for the public option. But the problem is they can filibuster it. So I say, Harry Reid, make Lieberman filibuster. If I were Harry Reid, I'd say, all right, put the bill on all day, all night. Let's see how long Joe Lieberman and the Republicans can talk. Shut down Congress for 3 weeks as they talk into the night. You can make them do that. And the minute they stop talking, boom, you have a vote. Let's do it old-fashioned style. Let's play some hard-knuckle politics. I think Lieberman would look really silly if he had to do that. So there are options like that. I hope Rita has the stomach for it.
Well, listen, Mark, you're saying something that my listeners have been begging for years, and I hope that Harry Reid does that. Listen, I'm going to let you go. I just wanted to tee up the second hour. You're going to hear some of my interviews from Copenhagen. We did Bradley Whitford yesterday. We're playing something that I taped at an event where Jane Goodall was being honored, and it's just fantastic. She is such an eco-pioneer. My short interview with Richard Branson about what they're not talking about in Copenhagen that they should be talking about. And who else do I have? Jerome Ringo and the former president of Costa Rica. And our call screener, Herb, after the tree hugger segment, is going to be guest hosting the second hour, and I'm looking forward to that. Mark, thanks so much, buddy, and thanks for the illumination and elucidation on inside politics in D.C., and have a great rest of your show.
Well, thank you, Richard, and I always appreciate when you allow me to guest host. I love your listeners, and I really appreciate the chance to discuss things with them. And you have a good time in Copenhagen. Just remember, I will always be envious.
Well, don't be envious of the cold and the snow, but it is cool being here. Let's see what happens in the next 2 days.
You think they'd have a global warming conference in, I don't know, Nigeria, you know, or Costa Rica, for that matter, because I don't know if the cold and the snow is the right imagery you want for global warming. Maybe, I don't know, but I don't decide.
Well, you know that Imhoff and Sarah Palin and all those whack jobs, and they see?
That's right.
It's still snowing.
It didn't
not
exist.
Okay, have fun. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Richard. One thing, by the way, that if you don't know Sarah Palin did this, you should know. A lot of people think Sarah Palin is just ditzy and stupid. And sure, she's ditzy, and sure, she's not too smart. But she is a little too clever by half. And if you don't know this for sure, check out her views on global warming. And the best example I've seen of this is an op-ed by E.J. Dionne in The Washington Post. I'm sure you can find it online, where I learned something shocking. The shocking thing was not what I'm sure you've already heard, that Sarah Palin said that President Obama should not go to Copenhagen and, you know, global warming isn't real and all that kind of denial crap that we've heard for a long time. That BS, that's normal. That didn't surprise me. What surprised me is what E.J. Dionne showed about what Sarah Palin did before she was the Republican vice presidential nominee. In July 2008, that's only a year and a half ago, friends. It's just a month before she was chosen. She was talking about the severe effects that climate change was having in her home state of Alaska. In fact, when you think about it, Alaska is the state that will be most affected first by climate change. Already melting snows are threatening 31 Alaskan villages, Sarah Palin wrote in her speech as governor. In other words, it's not that she's too stupid and she just denies global warming. It's worse. She knows global warming is happening, and she's purposely lying about it because she's appealing to the ignorance of those that support the Republican Party. So, yes, she may be stupid, she may be a ditz, but she's a little too clever by half. She is something worse than ignorant. She's kind of evil. If you want to talk about that, please go ahead. The toll-free number is 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. And then I want to move to my primary topic of this hour, race. I want to talk about the things that, let's face it, white people often don't talk about when blacks are in the room, that blacks talk about when whites aren't in the room. And when is it okay to acknowledge race? When is it racism? I want to talk about all those topics, including some comments from my own listeners. When we come back, 866-303-2270. We'll be right back after this.
Now back to Clout.
You're listening to Clout.
Welcome back to Clout. This is Mark Levine, having the honor and privilege of guest hosting for Richard Green. If you don't know what I do, I host the Inside Scoop on Washington. I'm an ex-congressional attorney. That's why when Richard can ask me about Senate procedure, I've got the answers for you. And it should at least give some hope to those of us who are ruining the day that Joe Lieberman was ever a Democrat, that knowing that whatever the Senate passes, it's not the end. It's really just the end of the beginning. What will matter is what goes on in that conference in January. But, you know, I guess I get depressed talking about politics all the time. Don't get me wrong. I like it. That's what I do. And I you know, cap and trade, Copenhagen and health care and Afghanistan, and that's my daily bread and butter. But every now and then, particularly near the end of the year, I like to go personal and tell you a little bit about what I'm thinking when I'm not talking about politics, and to hear from you, to hear your views on all of that. And let's face it, the personal is political. That's what we learned from the feminists, right? They taught us that the way we think about things affects our politics, and that what happens in our personal lives becomes political. So I want to talk about a topic that I think too few people talk about, at least in mixed company, and definitely in public. I want to talk about race. Race, racism, racialism. You know, a lot of people talk, I would say, in very stereotypical terms about race. They'll say the obvious, you know, the Ku Klux Klan is racist, and that's really kind of uninteresting, rather than talking about how race affects our ordinary lives. And even ways that we can pretend to not notice race in ways that I think are, I don't know, kind of racist. I mean, for example, if you're a white person and you're talking with a bunch of white people and you're describing a friend of yours who happens to be African-American and they're supposed to look for them on the street, you say he's a guy, he's about 6 feet tall and 150 pounds, and you don't mention the fact that he's black because you're a liberal and you think, well, I can't say that. Well, of course you can say that. It's okay to notice race. What's not okay is to prejudge people based on their race. That is racism. But all of this came to mind recently, about a month ago, when I was going to a concert with my nephew. He's a 19-year-old, and he attends college here in Washington, D.C. And we went to hear an Allman Brothers concert. Now, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and this is this kind of country rock, and they're very good guitarists, really talented musicians. And I was enjoying the show and thinking back to my hometown in Nashville when I started noticing, let's face it, all the rednecks around me. I saw mullets I hadn't seen since the 1980s. I heard hooping and hollering and saw lots of, redneck. Sorry. What else do you want to call them? Is that maybe that's insulting too. I apologize for that. But let's just say people of a certain working class white background. But what I noticed was there were no blacks around. None. I mean, on stage, in the musicians, there are maybe 15 musicians. I think three of them were black. I counted because I couldn't find three blacks in the audience. Here there were thousands of people, and they just didn't come. Maybe black people just don't listen to white music, or maybe they would feel uncomfortable. And as I looked and I listened, I had to think that many of the people I saw would not be that different in looks from what you might see at a Klan rally. Oh, well, they didn't have the white robes on. But I wonder, and this is a question I want to ask the black people in our audience, whether they would be uncomfortable in such a milieu. Because I know that, I've been to black churches, I happen to like gospel music, but I certainly know many white people who are uncomfortable walking in black neighborhoods. Now, I'm not talking about walking in a poor neighborhood at night where there's crime, and even to suggest that, you know, that's not all black neighborhoods are that way, folks. I just know that when I, for example, cross over the bridge in Washington, cross over the Potomac from Virginia to Maryland, I land in an area that's about 90% black, and I notice it when I'm around. So when is it okay to notice racial difference, and when is it not? And what is it that white people say when blacks aren't there, and black people say when whites aren't there? You ever been in discussion, and I could say this as a white person, I have been, talking with a bunch of white people about race, because whites and blacks talk about race, and a black person walks up, and even though the conversation is innocent, it's not racist, people change the topic. Well, I think that in itself is a wrong reaction. But I want to encourage people who call in, every question is valid, every topic is valid, every anecdote is valid. I got a listener who wrote in, I want to read some of what he had to say about television and movies and how he thinks they only have the pretty white actresses and not the pretty African-American actresses. But really, I want to have an open discussion about race. Hey, I was a token white guy on Black Talk Radio. That certainly doesn't bother me at all to talk about it. But I just think when we don't talk about it, sometimes we give it more power than it really should have. 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270. Give us a call. Let's talk about race. We'll be right back after this.
We now return to Clout.
You're listening to Clout.
Welcome back to Clout. My name is Mark Levine. I host the Inside Scoop in Washington, and I'm filling in for Richard Green tonight. And we're talking about race. And I talked about this last night on my show, and we had a whole full phone bank. So I hope that some of you will call in, some of you Air America people, 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. Listen, I've always thought that race is a construct. There is no particular reason why we ascribe meaning to someone's color of their skin. In fact, frankly, I'm darker than some black people, some of those more light-skinned black people, or the kinkiness of hair, or, you know, all the things that we ascribe to race. There's really no important distinction there. We could say that people should be separated into right-handedness and left-handedness and eye color and height and all the other things that can be used to separate people. But even though there's no real genetic reason why we should ascribe meaning to these minor physical differences, let's face it, race has been and will continue to be important. It has been important for thousands of years and will be continue to be important at least throughout our lifetimes. So it is a construct, and yet because we are socialized to, I don't know, respect those who are like ourselves, to at least be comfortable more with people like ourselves and people different from ourselves, then our own race, our religion, our sexual orientation, our gender, all these things affect our perceptions about who we are. And so I think it's okay to talk about race as long as we don't prejudge people based on their race. That is prejudice. That is racism. And I want to see what you think about it. I also got a caller who, one of my listeners, who wrote a really extended, wonderful thing on my website. I can't read it all right now, but I encourage you to go there. Just go to marklevineradio.com, M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E, radio.com, or radioinsidescoop.com, whatever you remember best. And I got to give a shout-out to my friend Jeff. He's a longtime listener, and he writes in detail in really hilarious ways about racism in Hollywood. And I'm not talking about the standard kind of racism, the kind where, you know, the black person's mistreated. And I mean, racism exists. I'm not denying that. I'm talking about the kind of more Well, more subtle kind. The kind you might notice, I don't know if you remember that old movie, The Hollywood Shuffle, when they talked about how blacks were portrayed in Hollywood. But since this is a clout show about Hollywood, I think Jeff has some pretty perceptive things to say about that. And again, he writes at length. But the heart of his argument is that Hollywood is full of beautiful white women, but very few Halle Berrys and Janet Jacksons. Instead, it's much more the Whoopi Goldberg and the Oprah Winfrey and the Queen Latifah. And as a black man, a heterosexual black man, Jeffrey is upset that he sees all these pretty white women on Hollywood, but not pretty black women. He talks about 400-pound black mamas, people like Della Reese and Nell Carter and Florida Evans, these sort of homely, gentle women. And why would that be? You know, or even firebrand women. But why is it that you can't show pretty black women on TV? And I guess I would just say to Jeff, first of all, I think he's right. And I love it when a listener brings up a point that I hadn't thought of before. I think he's absolutely right. But I want to broaden it. It's not just about black women. First of all, it's about women. Have you ever noticed how the 60, 70-year-old white actor gets the pretty 25-year-old model? But it doesn't seem to go the other way around. I don't see too many 30-year-old boy toys with 60-year-old women. And I got to tell you, I'm Jewish. Happy Hanukkah, everyone, by the way. It's the sixth night of Hanukkah. You don't see many Jewish actors and actresses that are good looking. They seem to be the friendly neighbor or the wild, neurotic person, just as the black person, as Jeff is complaining about, is the alien. The Asians, again, they might be sort of the friendly sub-stereotype, plug it in there, scientist or something. But they don't seem to have families and so forth. And the other thing that Jeff points out is that there's no families that are shown. The black actors, they sort of come in, at least the pretty ones, come in and have no family connection. They're just shown out of nowhere while the white people have mom and dad and three kids. So I thought that was a very interesting comment. Let's go to Michael in Chicago. Michael, welcome to Clout.
Howdy.
Howdy.
I kind of reject the idea of the word racism because it implies that it's an unreasoned bias against a particular race. Whereas if my anecdotal evidence is that, I've had more negative experiences with Armenians than with Irish, I don't want to hang out with Armenians, I'm not racist.
I think you are, and let me tell you why. Okay, and I'm not meaning to attack you here, but you raised the question, and I'm very glad you called. But I got to tell you, here's where I think it's racist. It is perfectly fair and reasonable and just and ordinary to say that you've had a bad experience with an individual. You don't like that individual. I don't care whether the individual is white or black. Call that individual a jerk. They are a jerk. There are some liberals who are less inclined to call a black person a jerk. If they're a jerk, they're a jerk. I don't care whether they're white or black or Asian or whatever. But conversely, to say in your hypothetical example that because you've had a bad experience, I don't care if you had a bad experience with six Armenians. That doesn't mean that all Armenians are bad people. It may be just those six. Heck, I'm not meaning to attack Armenians. It could even be a majority. But anytime you ascribe a certain trait, a non-physical trait, a trait like whatever negative trait you want to ascribe to an entire group of people, based on your experience anecdotally with a few group of people, yeah, I have to say I think that's racism. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Let me give you a little bit of background. My wife and I divorced. We live in Atlanta. This is a couple of years ago. We both, because of attrition and attraction, were dating black people.
Okay.
Wonderful. I mean, good night. These were the cream of the crop. But one thing we
see that makes me shudder even when you say that. But go ahead. I'll tell you why.
No. Because I'll defend that to the hilt.
Well go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. White collar professionals. And
okay.
That's how I exist. So that's what I'm attracted to.
Right.
So, we came back to each other, we're talking. One thing we agreed that they talked about a lot was the negativity of their race. They didn't like black men. They didn't like black women. They were going out with us for a reason, and it was that they were racist against their own race.
Okay, well, Michael, let me think about it this way, all right? When it comes to physical attraction, I will say right from the outset, there's no rhyme or reason. It is not racist, in my view, to say I'm attracted to white people or Asians or blacks. It's not racist
right.
if a black
right.
is attracted to whites or a black is attracted to blacks or a white
I
is
agree.
Attracted to blacks or a white is attracted to whites or to Asians or Latinos or everyone or no one. Let's face it, it's not sexist if a man is attracted to a woman or a man is attracted to a man, you know?
Of any race, I agree.
Exactly. Absolutely. So you know, sexual orientation, attraction, I don't know the answer. I think we're born with it, but I certainly don't think it's racist. I do think, though, that it's easier, and this is true, and I'm Jewish, it's easier for blacks to ascribe safely negative things of their own people than for someone who's not of that group. I think it's easier for me to say some things that I know that Jewish people do, and of course I'm exaggerating, and of course I'm overgeneralizing, and of course it's not all Jewish people, but it's easier to sort of attack your group, and frankly, it's more harmless to attack your own group, and because then when you're attacking another group, in fact, I would bet, and you know, I can't speak for the people that you and your ex-wife dated, but if you were to turn around and say those same things that they said to you about black people, they might stiffen up and say that's racist, because it's okay, I think, and very safe.
No, you're right.
To
attack,
to say,
and I agree.
You know, my Uncle Pete in my family is a lush, da, 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 but don't you call my Uncle Pete a lush. You know, who are you to attack my Uncle Pete so he has a drink from now and then? Give me a break. You know, it's that sort of safety in there. So I just want to, I guess, clear. Look, I think that there is some truth in ethnic stereotypes. I'm going to say that, all right? I think that there's a reason why we think of, Irish liking alcohol or Jews being doctors or lawyers. I do think there is maybe more than the average in certain ways, you know, there are more black basketball players than white basketball players. I'm going to say that. I notice it. It's true. Where you get in trouble, I think, is where you ascribe one thing to everyone, and that's where you go off the beaten path, because there are lots of blacks that are not good basketball players. Trust me on that. Thanks for your call, Michael. I appreciate it. Let me go to Tom in Detroit. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm real good. Thank you. I got just a little bit to say about this. If
okay.
you mentioned black, white, Jewish, Mexican, whatever, that's racist in the first place. It should be just a person, not their race.
Well, see, here's the
thing.
I live
in Detroit.
Yeah.
And I've been 64 years I've been here in a predominantly white and black neighborhood, 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And we never called ourselves white or black. And, you know, I'm just not into calling people names, whether it be by their race, black, Afro-American. We call each other by brothers.
Well, and I like that. Let me tell you something. I agree with you, and I certainly don't think of my friends that way. The reason I'm talking about it, though, is that I think that that can be a little too easy for people, and I'm liberal, I'm progressive, to say, you know,
right.
I don't see race. I think that's
right,
because I think we see it even when we don't want to see it. In other words,
right, I agree with you.
You know, you may not want to think of your friend such and such as black or white, but the very fact that we're discussing it, yeah, you think, oh, yeah, that friend's
racist.
Black. And that's why. I guess I want to make a distinction between
right.
talking about race and racism, because I think sometimes people are so afraid to talk about race. That's one reason I'm talking about it tonight here on the radio. White and black people talk about race, but usually they only talk about with people of their own race. And they're so
right.
afraid to talk about race with someone of another race because they're afraid of offending them. And what I want to say is it's okay. In fact, we need more talking about race. In fact, it's the fear of talking about race that sometimes causes people to back off talk about even more. So, no, the issue about judging people as individuals, I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, I agree. And I wish more people would live that theory.
Well, thanks so much. Hey, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Let's see if we can go to Anita in Los Angeles, who is a black actress in Hollywood. She may suffer from the same complaints that my listener Jeff was talking about. Anita, are you there?
Actually, my name is Amina, but
Amina,
that's okay,
sorry.
Everyone. No, it's fine. Everyone gets it wrong. And actually, I wanted to strongly disagree with him, and I mean
really?
All due, absolutely, and I'm going to tell you what's going on the ground because I'm in the business.
Okay. No. I want to hear it, and I'm sure Jeff wants to hear it, too.
Yeah, and I think, and first of all, let me just comment on where I think he's coming from, and this is just an assumption, but he's right in that, you know, there is some sort of philosophical thing about white people being afraid of black beauty. And I think that that's where his comment is coming from. But as a black actress who's on the ground every day, like I just came from an audition, I'm going to one tomorrow, this is how I make my living, I can tell you quite frankly that pretty black girls work exponentially more than quote-unquote homely black girls, as he described us. I would put myself in that category because I'm sort of an everyman kind of a black girl. But it's like, and what I think the distinction that he's making there is that sometimes in casting of black actresses, it would be easier for a patronly heavyset black actress to work than it would be for a very, very attractive black actress to work. That is no longer the case.
Wow.
As a black actress on the ground, seeing it every day. And I think that across the board, all of my girlfriends who range in attractiveness, quite frankly, I think they're all beautiful, but we all sort of range in, I would say, type. That's what we say in Hollywood.
You know what, Amina? The caller, the person who wrote on my blog, Jeff, has actually just now called into the show. I'll tell you what, we got to take a break. I'd like you to hold on, Amina. When
sure.
we come back, we're going to hear from Jeff. Let him defend himself. After all, it's his view that I articulated here. And then we're going to come back to Amina and see what she has to say to what Jeff had to say. So all of that is coming up right after the break. We've got 866-303-2270 and back after this.
Now back to Clout.
You're listening to Clout.
Welcome back to Cloud. This is Mark Levine filling in for Richard Green, talking about race. We have very little time left, but the person who wrote on my blog about how black actresses, the ones that are hired, are all homely, Jeff is actually on the line. And Jeff, you heard Amina. She disagrees with you.
Yeah, well, I don't think she heard the whole point. I want to make a point about this. Okay, I'm going back in time to, like, let's say when Whoopi Goldberg got her contracts for all those movies she did.
Okay, she's saying now, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 years ago, not so much today.
Okay, well, actually, that's not true. I mean, when you go back and look at G.I. Joe, where there's not a black woman on earth, that's what I'm talking about. See, G.I. Joe is even worse than Independence Day, when there were two black strippers on Earth and no other. You know, when the people are running down the street, all the extras, and there's not a single black woman in New York running down the street.
Okay, well, hold on. Let me hear from Amina, because I know she'll want to respond. Amina, what do you think about that?
I think that Jeff and I are in complete agreement about that, and I stand by what I said before, which is that he wants to see more pretty or attractive black women on screen, and he's right. He's speaking to a stereotype of, like, you know, a myth of, like, white people being afraid of black beauty, and so as a result, it was easier for Hattie McDaniel to work in that type of role. But I'm here. You're right. There were no black people in those movies, but I will put the question to Jeff. When is the last time that he saw a homely, quote-unquote, which I kind of reject that term, but,
yeah,
like,
well, I understand.
A homely black woman in a Tyler Perry movie, for example.
Well, I think he pointed out, and if you read his comment on my blog, and I really encourage everyone to do that, it's radioinsidescoop.com. You can leave your own comment and actually start a nice little dialogue there. Maybe Amina and Jeff can talk to each other via my blog. But if you read it there, well, I think what he was saying is that in black-owned, you know, black-run movies, there you do see pretty black women. But
and
actually,
that is all that you see.
Exactly.
You never see, for example, a dark-skinned girl with natural hair. Like,
exactly.
Like, what is he calling black beauty? Is it a light-skinned girl with straight hair? Because those are the women that he claimed were attractive who are also thin. He called everyone homely who had dark skin, natural hair, or was heavy set. And
right.
It's just kind of like,
Well, see, I want to say that I think there's an implicit sexism in every, and I love Jeff. He's a great caller, and he's been listening to my show for years. But there's an implicit sexism in all of this, because it seems that in everything, whether black or white, you always got the pretty woman, and it's not so often you got the pretty man, right? I mean, again, you got, I mean, I don't know why Clint Eastwood, why any woman would date that very ugly fella. I don't get it. But, you know, I'd like to see, you know, at least if you're going to stereotype people, at least be fair to both men and women. Jeff, quick comment, and then I want to see if I can get to one more caller. Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I understand what you're saying. You know, black women are, by numbers, getting prettier and prettier on TV. But what I'm saying is you don't get those knockout sex symbols like Transformers and things like that. And are you still there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, you don't get to see those knockout sex symbols. And you know, like I pointed out, those sex symbols go on to be, that they go on to play moms and aunties and ever that are also more attractive than the black moms and aunties and matriarchs.
Well, I hope, Jeff, that you and Amina will keep this conversation going on my blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. Our time's about up, and Mike has been holding on a very long time. Mike is in an interracial couple. Mike, you got 1 minute. Go. Are you still there, Mike?
How you doing today, Mark?
Go ahead. Unfortunately, I got a minute left, so real quick.
Okay, real quick. I am married to a beautiful African-American woman. We have a beautiful daughter. My thoughts on racism, I have a short time, so real quick. I think, one, people are too afraid to speak about it in light terms. Obviously, the history of race in this country isn't light, but, you know, you should be able to lighten up and just have a... doesn't always have to be a serious conversation.
I agree with you, and we're going to have to end it there, Mike. If you want to find out more about my show or even hear this show if you missed part of it, go to marklevineradio.com or radioinsidescoop.com. And let's face it, I think we all see race. The trick is not to judge people based upon it. This is Mark Levine signing off.